This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? We'll see how we get around. Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice to the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points east and west where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org, wamf.org, or acornradio.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Fred Brooks, Professor Brooks, Georgia State University, professor of social work there, and a veteran of Acorn organizing. This is part of our special series. Once a month during the 50th anniversary of Acorn, we'll be asking someone, leader or organizer or member of Acorn, to talk about what their time and experience was like with Acorn. Fred, welcome to Acorn.
Welcome to Acorn.
What did I just say? Welcome to Wage World. You already knew about being an Acorn. Okay, watch out. We're on it. Okay, we got Fred. We'll be. Let me ask you just, you know, to start out. Give me when you worked for Acorn, how long you were there, where'd you work? You know, give us some of the background that makes you an authority on Acorn.
Well, I'm an authority on Acorn during the decade of the 80s. I was hired in Atlanta, Georgia, October of 1979. Just basically a year out of college, recently back from New England, a stint up there I had for a while, job to job. I got hired as a door-to-door canvasser in the Atlanta office and worked there for about just 6 months. And one thing about Acorn, if you proved you could do the job, you would quickly get promoted.
You were on the road.
I was never, up to that age of like 22, I'd never been west of the Mississippi. My first Acorn transfer was to Denver, Colorado, opening up that office with Liza Hendricks and Peter Wood. After that, I opened my own office as a campus director in Columbus, Ohio. Did another stint back in Denver. Then when Pat McCoy took over the canvas, I got transferred to Chicago, Illinois for about a 2.5-year gig. Oakland, California, took over the Oakland and California operation for a while. And then as the decade was winding down, I was transferred to New Orleans in the fall of 89, I guess you'd say. And then my career ended in January of 1990.
Well, I've got to, you know, that was 10 years, join Acorn, see the world, at least the world of the U.S. then. I mean, you're lucky you aren't working now. Who knows what part of the world you'd be caught up in. I got to ask you, one of the reasons you were famous within Acorn is during Columbus, you really introduced the notion of something called tagging, which a lot of people, you know, scoff about, but boy, that was a great program. What was tagging, Fred?
Yeah, tagging was a technology that the director at the time, Peter Wood, he was the National Campus Director, he had picked that up somewhere, and it's when Acorn was in some serious debt, and we needed to raise some extra money on weekends, and the model was very, very simple. I put an ad in the Columbus Dispatch that said, have fun making $15 to $25 a day supporting social change or supporting Acorn. And we would hire teenagers at the time. I don't remember what the minimum age was, but it was mostly, you know, 16 to 20-year-olds probably.
I remember we had to get parental notes for a lot of them.
Yeah, people had to sign a waiver. I'm sure we ran all this through our law firm at the time. But we hired up to 30 kids on a Saturday to go out with cans, and we had little bitty flyers that supported Acorn in a campaign. Usually it was a utility rate campaign. We asked people to donate between a quarter and a dollar in a can to support Acorn's operation. And we'd have six or eight kids per intersection. I would have experienced canvassers managing a variety of intersections. And one of my proudest moments of all time was once, it was in August of 81 or 82 in Columbus, Ohio. We had 30 kids, and we netted, after we paid everybody, the net was $1,000 in coins for a one-day tag day, and that set the record for Acorn. I was extremely proud of that, and I'm sure throughout the entire summer we raised, $3,000 or $4,000 doing tag days, probably. And I wrote a memo about it. It spread around the Acorn world, and I have no idea. I'd love to see the statistics of how much we did raise doing tag days, but it's a very simple technology. We only did it on weekends. But it seemed to make a difference. It
made a huge difference.
Afloat.
I enjoyed, we went to, and Fred was part of our crew, we went to the archives of the Wisconsin State Historical Association, where Acorn has its archives, last summer, July, and I found the memo and have it and reread it and enjoyed it, both Peter's notes and your memo. But I know you remember in New Orleans, they picked that up, and it was a primary fundraiser for the union when we were first starting out in Local 100. And they had crews. Beth was running crews, and I can't remember the other guy who we had. They had vans. They were running $1,000 almost every day. And the biggest problem, and that was after leakage. You remember what the leakage was on these tags? People, sometimes the kids would just, you know, take their can and walk away from the corner. So, you know, when they were running these crews in New Orleans, it could get pretty wild out there, and they definitely didn't have supervisors at every corner. So a lot of it was, you know, Beth or whoever it was on the crew coming by and picking people up at the end. And sometimes you'd drop, you know, four or five young people out there in the corner, and there'd be three when you picked them up. So even netting $1,000 every Saturday for a long time there. Cecile Richards, who most recently people know as the head of Planned Parenthood, I remember when she talked to, addressed Acorn year-end meeting and talked, and when she started her rap, she talked about, let me tell you this, when I was with Local 100 and when I was with Acorn, I was a great tagger. And at that point, a lot of people, you know, here you are, you know, Cecile always was, you know, turned out to the teeth and, you know, a dynamic speaker and very, you know, wildly famous in the country and obviously in the women's world for what she was doing at Planned Parenthood. Just up there talking about how she was such a great tagger. And I remember she was a great tagger. She'd be out there on Claiborne Claiborne and Jackson, and she would rock those streets. And she made some money for us. But a lot of people sort of scoff at tagging. Wait, I mean, really? You were out there? I mean, tagging? I mean, was that appropriate? Well, hey, we were making great money. I mean, I keep trying to talk people into getting tagging going again because it's a proven technology. So that was one of the highlights for us of your career, one of the iconic memo there. But what are some other highlights of your decade with Acorn?
Well, there's quite a few.
Sure.
The opening up Denver with high expectations was very exciting. I remember going into Denver, the first phone call we got that answered our activist ad was a guy named Tony Massaro. Peter Wood remembers this very well. We opened the office at 9 a.m. on a Monday morning. He was the first call we got, first interview, the first hire, the first field manager. Liza and I built a crew of 25 canvassers that summer. And it was a rough and tumble crew. Obviously, we had six or eight cars going out full of canvassers, people coming back every night, and we were the first office in my recollection to break the $10,000 a week barrier in gross. The net would have been about probably around $5,000 a week from that operation. And, you know, it was big. It was exciting. You know, we covered all of Denver. You know, it was just a tremendous learning experience. I mean, you know, how would I say it? It was just nice to be part of the action of an office that was literally setting the standard. And as you know, well, no, Canvas had highs and lows. 2 or 3 years later, that office fell apart and had to be rebuilt.
It always required maintenance, that's for sure. But, you know, during that period, more than two-thirds of the money that supported Acorn came from either dues or internal fundraising programs like Canvas. So that was, in many ways, that period until the mid-80s, particularly when the Canvas was so strong, that was the most stable financial period that Acorn had until about 1984.
No, it was fantastic. The other thing I got a kick out of, again, when I got hired as a canvasser, I was first, when I heard about the job description, going door to door, you had a quota. If you didn't meet the quota in a week, you were let go, essentially, fired. It was essentially an observation period. I was scared to death. I had no idea if I could do that. I considered myself a shy, fairly introverted, kind of an intellectual person, and I had no idea if I could learn that skill. And the fact that I did learn it and then kept being challenged to be a field manager, to train people, then to be a director where I was in charge of hiring and firing, what I liked is learning, you know, besides what we were working for, what I would call the personal transformation.
You learned something about yourself during that period.
Oh, absolutely. And I have one or two little scenarios of kind of crisis management, thinking on your feet, dealing with bureaucracy. I don't know if you want to hear any of those stories or not, but
this is your half hour, Fred. This is the 50th anniversary of Acorn, and we're going to delve into everything. So if you got one or two you want to share, that'd be great.
I have two quick ones. It was the kind of thing a year or two before Acorn, I couldn't imagine having dealt with a crisis like this and pulled it off. One was in Denver that first summer of 1980, running a crew of 10 people. I had a 1963 Chevy Biscayne.
Okay.
By the time we got out to the turf and I dropped people off, the car had been overheating. Essentially, we'd blown the water pump. It was leaking water. The engine light was on and everything. Luckily, in my crew, I actually had a mechanic, a guy named Kurt Stubbs, who was also a good canvasser.
Right.
Kurt and I somehow got to an auto after we dropped off the crew in good shape. Then Kurt was able to diagnose the problem. Somehow we got to a car parts store. He bought a water pump and the tools to put the water pump in. Fixed the water pump, filled it up with water, got back out on the turf and raised quota, and then picked up the crew on time.
Wow. That's a great
story.
If
that's not crisis management, I don't know what is. This is before cell phones. We couldn't call the director. We might have found a payphone to do that or something. But thinking on your feet, fast action, and still trying to get the job done. And one other scenario that's slightly more complicated than that. It was at the end of the 1984 Dallas Acorn Convention, which was in this enormous tent city in the Trinity River bottom in Dallas, Texas, in August of 1984. I'm sure you remember that.
And how can we ever forget? The temperatures alone are seared into many Acorn members' memory.
I was part of the setup crew and the breakdown crew. So I've been in Dallas for at least 3 weeks. And we can talk more about this later, but one of the proudest things I've ever done for Acorn was creating turf maps for 1,500 Acorn members to go door-to-door during one afternoon of the Dallas convention and register voters. We had postcard registration in Dallas. Again, the entire Acorn member contingent went out in buses, and I had to have maps on each bus to get, 30 or 40 people. And, again, this is before GPS, before phones. the maps were Xeroxed and handwritten. So we literally...
This was real map work, back when maps were real and we were real with them.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, from the feedback I got from some of the head organizers and some of the members was that the door-to-door voter registration in Dallas was the highlight of their entire experience there. And according to Steve Kest, I think my memory says we registered about 10,000 voters in that one afternoon. And he always said it was the most one-day registration in that entire summer for any organization. Can you verify that?
Well, I'll have to look it up after we get off of this show sometime. But I will tell you this, in every convention after Dallas, we always had an event like that that put all the members on the doors. We've been talking to Fred Brooks, a veteran from Acorn's time in the decade of the 80s, as he's been telling some of his stories. But Fred, you also came back to do a particular job at a number of conventions that was one of the hardest, thankless, and most important jobs, and that was basically being the bus foreman. Why don't you explain what that was like and how many times we managed to lure you back in just to help on that?
Well, I cut my teeth on that. Literally, in 1980, you know, again, I was a hotshot field manager in Denver, and when I got to New York for the New York convention, Mike Shea had that job at the time. And I don't know, Peter or Mike just recruited me to work with Mike on organizing the bus drivers the moment they got into New York to drop off their membership and then to give them a map and the schedule for the week. And working with Mike Shea was terrific. The guy was incredibly organized. It went smooth. I thought it.
But you have to tell the listeners why dealing with some of our irascible and prickly bus drivers was such a difficult job.
Well, Peter was a master at that. Peter was just, you know, calm as a cucumber. Could listen to anybody. Let him say their thing, and then let people know what needed to be done.
But often they would disappear, as you said. Sometimes this was in the pre-cell phone. They would disappear. They would drop off a crew. We needed them to take people to an action the next day. They'd be up in some motel. We'd put them in. I mean, you know, this was an interesting job.
Well, Peter and Mike knew. You know, they knew what was going on, and it was like, I don't think I was really in charge of buses until like the Washington D.C. convention, and then I remember it, which was like 86. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then the Atlanta convention, which was 88, I was totally in charge. And we stayed at Georgia Tech. We had an action down at the Federal Reserve Building.
Now, by that time, we were using walkie-talkies, weren't we?
Yeah, I'm sure we did. And anyway, I mainly came back when I would just have an intellectual interest in going to another convention, like the Los Angeles convention in the 2000s sometime. And as I recall, Marty Shalhoub and Pat McCoy were in charge of transit, and they just asked me to help them, and I said I'm happy to do it, and just to, you know, play a role and help out.
How many conventions?
I was never in charge of it again.
Oh, really? Yeah, but you were often a piece of the puzzle. How many conventions did you work with on transportation? It must have been five or six at least.
Well, while at Acorn, it was one every other year for 10 years, so that was five.
Right.
And then a couple after that, probably L.A. and Philadelphia. There was another. I helped Pat another time. I can't remember what city it was in.
We had one great T-shirt that was like one of the rock group T-shirts that had, you know, in the way they have all the places they're going to visit in a summer thing, where we had a list of all the conventions. I used to keep that T-shirt handy so that I could remember where we were at different two-year periods, because every 2 years we had a convention through 2008. Fred, obviously you have some different perspective now, and we've worked subsequently. You've been to a number of functions and seen a lot of ACORN, not only in the U.S., but around the world. As a professor at Georgia State, what's your perspective now as you study ACORN as opposed to being a participant? How does that differ?
Well, here's the way I would put that. Studying it is fun and intellectually interesting, and I get to write about it and so forth. But it makes me want to get back into the trenches and organize. So I wish I could take 6 months off and work completely on voter suppression, voter purging. We did a taste of this in Atlanta this summer where we ended up verifying the existence of 98 doors where, as I recall, 16
exactly, 16 of 98, 16.4% were still valid
still
voters.
Still living in that residence, yes. Anyway, I would love to be able to kind of get back and do some of that full time if I could. But
when you're ready, we'll be waiting for you, Fred.
And I've joked to you on a number of occasions, I kind of would like to end my career the way I started it, by knocking on doors and asking people to join or support, you know, a grassroots community group that's fighting for real change. And obviously, as a professor now, I try to turn my students onto that as much as possible. And I'm delighted when a student, during the run-up to the first Obama election, I had a student that graduated and immediately went up to North Carolina and actually ran a canvass for Obama in North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
In which we know he only won North Carolina by 20 or 30,000 votes or something. It was very close that time. And then she went on and worked for SEIU for a while at Denver. So
who was that?
I can turn students on to organizing. I'm delighted with that. I mean, I'm at the age where, you really think what's going to change the world is the up-and-coming generations, right? So I try to turn people on to what I consider the best models of social change out there. And I've always thought ACORN's model was the best or one of the best, no question about it.
Fred, you've also been able to participate a number of times in one of the things that ACORN put together and has kept alive. This is actually the first year in 18 or 19. We haven't actually had an international dialogue, but something called the Organizers Forum that we started, as I say, right after the turn of the century, where we put together labor community organizers, as well as sometimes environmental activists, sometimes some philanthropists and people, sometimes academics, and go to a different country with a delegation every year. You've been on several of those trips, and I wonder if you'd tell people what the Organizers Forum has been like experiencing that work around the world.
Sure. It's been a delightful learning experience for me. And I have to admit, my first one started off with a total bang, which was Cairo, Egypt, between the fall of Mubarak and the first election.
Within the first year of the demonstrations at Tahrir Square, yeah.
Exactly. And that, I can still remember sitting in that hotel room where the people that had been in Tahrir Square just 6 months before were describing this stuff blow by blow, and it was so vivid and exciting to hear these stories they were telling about how they literally toppled a 30-plus-year dictator. It was riveting, and we met all kinds of union people there. I remember how sharp we even met a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood that was as calm as could be, but as smart and as incisive, and he was nobody's fool.
And they were under the gun at that point, needless to say.
Yeah, the guy was very circumspect meeting with us, but you could tell these people were not you know, they knew what was going on. Anyway, the Egypt one was terrific. I've also been to the ones in Cameroon, Poland, Morocco, and Tunisia. I've done all of those.
It's a lot of different, that's some different experiences, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd never even been to Africa before this, and now I've been, four times. And Cameroon was a trip, taking that field trip out to these palm oil plantations by this French conglomerate that runs these all over the world, and land grabbing, stealing indigenous populations, farming property, and seeing the stuff they're doing against that was incredible. And obviously you remember the adventure trying to get back from the turf that day.
That's another one of those crisis management scenarios you were describing where the car breaks down, except the difference is there's nothing, nowhere, anywhere around. It's a dirt road. People are telling us if we are there after nightfall, we might as well kiss our sweet butts goodbye. We ended up being towed by a half rope that kept falling off. It was... we don't really want to go there. These organizing forum experiences are great educational and organizing experiences for everybody. But, yes, that was something. That was a campaign against Bolloré Sockfin, which is a conglomerate based in Brussels and Paris that has been the head of it.
Well, let me add one thing to that.
Sure.
I mean, again, we ended up having to pack about 15 people into like a 10-passenger van to get home. It was extremely uncomfortable. But here's what I remember about the trip home in the end. And it had to do with all these youthful organizers in the van. We could have easily been, old, uncomfortable, disgruntled, whatever. But the younger organizers broke out into songs and chants. And it became a very, very spirited, uplifting, funny camaraderie, solidarity building. I'll never forget all the, just the jubilation in the van on the way home. And it had to do with some organizers starting us in singing and chanting. And it made the trip totally bearable. For those 45 minutes on the way back from the plantation.
People were happy they didn't die on that road. But that's one of the great things about organizer forum trips and just being an organizer throughout the 50 years history of ACORN is organizers are adaptable. They work with a variety of people. They learn to relate to every other kind of situation you can imagine and people with different cultures, languages, experiences, and who come together collectively to act. And it's just one of those magical kinds of chemistry that no matter how bad it is, and we could tell, Cameroon, for example, we were all surprised to find out, we'd forgotten to ask when we got the little hotel, did they have hot water? and, it didn't. Luckily, Cameroon is a little warm. We're also, you're involved in at least helping advocate. We may be able to get this together. We're trying to see about organizing a tenants union in Atlanta to face all this eviction crisis and the rental and really the private equity experience in Atlanta. That's could be exciting.
Oh, absolutely. Atlanta does a lot of research on housing. We have a professor at Georgia State, Dan Immergluck, does terrific right. research on rental housing, evictions. You know another woman, Laura Raymond, is that her name?
Yeah, I believe research. So. I mean, they've been really great assets on our Home Savers campaign, which was very active on dealing with rent-to-own kinds of exploitation in houses. Fred, if people have any more questions or would like to reach out for you and talk about your experience or what happened in Georgia State and what you think about all this, do you have an email or anything that you could share with our listeners?
Absolutely. My email at Georgia State is fbrooks2@gsu.edu.
Are y'all going to be back in school soon, or what are you doing there? Are y'all online? How's that shaking out at GSU?
You know, it's, how would I put it? I'm going to start both of my classes. They're fairly small. They're students that are in the School of Social Work. I know about half of them already. We're going to start out online and just see the lay of the land. And we're not allowed to have more than 25% of the capacity of the room in the room at the same time. So if I have a room that can hold 40, we're only allowed to have 10 students in there at a time. I have 22 registered. So if we meet students personally, it would be different pods of students, and that would, I'm going to try to keep everybody on the same page.
Well, you're the man who can do it. So we live in interesting times, and that's been true of all your time and certainly the 50 years of ACORN. This is going to be part of a series. For more information about ACORN, see www.acorninternational.org. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we've talked about things that you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sings, things you've never seen and will never forget. Wade's World is underwritten by the Darrow Foundation, a progressive force enabling change based in Little Rock, Arkansas. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we'll have another guest, this is Wade Rathke for Wade's World. Thank you.